All right, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Junk Talk. I am your host, Kim Davis, and today we are live at Trauma Southwest. They have invited us to the show from here, so we're going to do Chalk Talk from here for at least to the end of the year, and then we'll see what happens moving forward. Although the end of the year is, can you believe it, only a few weeks away. Time waits on nobody. So listen, on today's show, I'm super excited to have Lewis Ray with me. He is a physical therapist who specializes in so you can see him too. All right, so there we go. We've been talking a lot about the injuries in the NFL, mostly in the NFL, and the fact that there have been so many season-ending injuries. And I've asked Lewis, I said, are there more injuries now than in previous years? And we started having this conversation. And what do you say to that? Are there more injuries now, or does it just seem that way?
There's a lot more injuries. I mean, every time for a season, not for a week or two, but after
right.
a season. A lot of that, to me, is related to the strength and conditioning program. And then, of course, it's available to the athletes. And whatever type of hit that they get, they're getting them at momentum-type speed, high momentum, and that's what's caused those end-of-the-year-type injuries.
I want to go back and talk about the strength and conditioning because I've often wondered that. I mean, I have a friend, Erica, who – hi, Erica. We worked together back in the days at Channel 2, but she's a big sports fan. And so we always talk about, like, who's the strength and conditioning coach? What is the strength and conditioning program when you see it? And so when you say strength and conditioning, tell me, because you have obviously a different level of expertise about bodies and structure. What do you think is happening with strength and conditioning?
Well, number one, I think now the strength and conditioning coaches have really been bodybuilders, not so to the point where they were tired. Strength and conditioning people, bodybuilders, and the structure of bodybuilding is totally different. It's not sports specific.
Tell me about that. What is the structure of bodybuilding, and why does that matter if that's the approach that you're seeing?
Bodybuilding is more like putting muscle mass without the flexibility. Because most of the movements are straight ahead.
Okay.
Not much more.
So it's about bulking up, getting bigger, and muscle mass, but you say flexibility is key.
It's supposed to be the key. Yeah. Lateral movements,
right.
Dexterity, you want to include the flexibility. And in many cases, that's not included. And so, as a result, you definitely get a lot more injuries because of the flexibility of these guys right there.
When you look at it, when you're watching it and you watch things unfold and happen, what do you see that shows you that? Or do you just know because of the kind of injuries? Or do you see something that says to you, there's a problem?
Well, I see because of the kind of injury. A lot of them are just running straight ahead,
mm-hmm.
and when they have to make a cut, they're hit, which means that their joints are not as flexible anymore.
Okay.
Which, once they're hit, boom, something's fractured, something's broken into, and as a result, they don't have the resistance to resist the impact.
Okay. So, let's talk about the flexibility piece, because it really seems, I mean, there's always been injuries. It's a part of the game. You know, football is a very physical game. But this year, they're not just injuries. They're season ending. They are, you know, torn pectoral muscles. There are a lot of ACLs. There's the Achilles tear. I mean, it's just to watch.
Well, when you're talking about supplements being involved in strength and conditioning,
mm-hmm.
which usually affect the joints, let's say the attachment of the Achilles tendon.
Okay.
The joints where there's an elbow. You have a lot of strength and conditioning programs for actually using and giving out a lot of supplements. And so as a result...
What kind of supplements, and is that not good?
I think most of them are GNC-type supplements.
Really?
Yes, I mean, you have some football players
right.
who have a suitcase full of supplements that they're taking. And when, as a result, they'll take them and the flexibility of the joints are being ripped into.
So you know what? A shameless plug, I think everybody should take Juice Plus. I mean, and I say that because it's fruits and vegetables in a capsule, right? It's not going to get you banned. It's not illegal. But in terms of supplements, what kind of things do you think people are taking is over the counter? They're not, like, you know, going to buy stuff that's in most cases illegal, although,
yeah,
you know, you can get some stuff at GNC that you shouldn't have.
Right.
But what kind of supplements do you think people are taking that's adding? I mean, the flexibility piece is really interesting to me. I don't understand why more teams aren't focused on flexibility. Is it because of the football mentality of muscle mass?
Well, it's the football mentality of muscle mass. When you're looking at $500,000 contracts and all that stuff, they're all trying to get an advantage. So they're taking these energy type of supplements that are supposed to enhance strength and speed.
Right.
Can't give you the name of it. But that's what they're taking. And of course, as a result, it has an awful.
Have you talked to some guys or worked with guys who you know? Is that would take these supplements that tend to impact their flexibility? Have you had to, like, rehab these guys?
I've reached them before, and I know that they were taking supplements, and mm-hmm. so as a result, that's what ended some of their injuries.
Really? So what kind of injuries are you most working with?
Tendons and joints.
Tendons and joints?
Yeah. Okay. Tendons and joints, that's what tears.
Okay.
Quad tendon, Achilles tendon. Those are more so the ones that are affected by the supplements.
Okay. Are the strength and conditioning coaches now, are they different kinds of people they're hiring in the league? Is that the deal?
Yeah, they're different. A lot of them have what they read, they take the test, they pass, and all of a sudden they know somebody who knows somebody who connects them to the job. And of course, when you have that, you have interns who just working with the program, who designed the athletic strength conditioning program, sports specific, you didn't get as many. Now you have the ones who just basically reading by the book and say, I think this is the right leg, let's do this, let's do that, because I know it works. And the next thing you know, they have injuries. So, me, in my opinion, from 1970 to 1980 to right now, even when I was at the University of Houston in 1983, strength coach, I didn't get that spring. We had like 6 ACLs because of the way he was administering the strength and conditioning.
Really?
He emphasized deep squats. I mean, so from the deep squats, he had all those ACL tears, and the minute they let him go, he didn't have another problem with that. And so that's what let me know that a lot of strength and conditioning coaches are emphasizing deep squats, speed and power. What it's doing is it's weakening the tendons and the joints. And as a result, when that happens, and they let that guy, that strength of stuff.
So how did they know that was the problem? Was it something that happened, had administration said, hey?
Well, our season program was run by Tom Wilson.
Tom Wilson is a guy who was a lot of athletes and did a lot of sport-specific training.
Well, you're talking about Tom Williams.
I mean, Tom Williams. Okay, you had Tom Wilson. I'm
Tom
different.
Tom Wilson at the University of Houston was an athletic trainer.
Okay.
Who also had control of the weight.
Okay.
And so the off-season programs were specific the way he wanted it done. So that particular spring, they decided to hire a strength and conditioning guy who was from Michigan and had all these bright ideas about what a strength and conditioning program should be like. He came in and just dismantled our whole football team because of
wow.
the way he was doing the strength and conditioning. And that's what led me to know that in the weight room, a lot of that is in effect. I mean, the athletic trainers, they treat and rehab, but the building of the body,
right?
Specifically the conditioning coach, a lot of them are not as experienced with what they're doing.
I'm talking to Lewis Ray. Lewis Ray is a physical therapist who specializes in sports medicine. He had a long career at the University of Houston in their athletic department, but then he went to Texas Orthopedic Hospital for 21 years. I can't believe it was that. I've known you a long time.
Yeah.
And he works with a lot of professional athletes. He's worked with high school athletes. People will bring him in to help rehab and get their athletes ready. But you work with a lot of professional basketball players. More basketball players than football players are about the same.
They're about the same. Specifically, I never forget the one I worked with, Damon.
Yeah.
Through John Lucas, of course. And Damon was one of those basketball players who tore a quad tendon.
Right.
But, I mean, rehabbed specifically with me to the fullest. In 7 months, I had him going.
Wow.
I mean, he would show up every day. He'd show up in the morning. Well, we worked from 7 in the morning to 7 at night.
So this rehab piece, trust me, I know. I'm not rehabbing to play NFL, but I had ankle surgery. And what's interesting is my doctor, who by all accounts is a great doctor, a great surgeon, didn't think I needed rehab. He said, well, you're very active, Kim. You don't need it. And so I went back and said, yeah, I'm not progressing like I think I should. And he finally said, okay, I'm going to prescribe therapy. So I found Lewis. And so I had all the have all this scar tissue. And it, like, happened so quickly. And it's almost as though if I had initially worked with you, I'd probably be – I'd be wearing high heels. I'd be in heels today.
Yeah.
So the rehab, the process is so important. And sometimes if you don't get the right direction, you could really be off track.
The most important thing to me is the experience and the knowledge of what you're doing when you're rehabbing. I do some conventional things, or maybe non-conventional. A lot of people, a lot of athletic trainers or rehab people don't do. I believe in using my hands.
And he does. I have asked me. That whole breaking of scar tissue is real, okay? So, whew, yeah.
I believe in massaging the sores and the muscles around the area that had the surgery. And that increases the blood flow, which increases the range of motion in the joint. That's why it's more effective the way I do it. A lot of people now are using the computers for measurement, range of motion. And
they use some kind of this tool. Is that supposed to help? Right, to help with the whole, it's a scraping thing.
For scar tissue.
Right.
To help break up the scar tissue.
Yeah.
To me, the most valuable things you have is your hands.
Right.
And when you're using your hands, you're able to feel, I have a feel and sense of every sore muscle that you have in your body. I can feel it.
And you find them. He finds them. Trust me, he finds them.
Yeah, and when I can feel it with my hands, that helps me give you pain but get rid of you.
Okay, yeah. Yeah.
So I think that. It
goes a long way. So, and if you wonder where we are at Chama Gaucho on the corner of Fountain View and Westheimer. They're kind enough to invite us to host Chalk Talk from here. We're actually in the little patio bar area. It's outside. So you may hear some ambient noise because we're outside, but it's a really cool space. They've got heaters. We don't need them yet, but they open at 11, so they're starting to open now, I believe. And I'm going to stick around and have lunch. So we're going to be here each week, and I invite you to come by and say hello. I have different guests live. I was really been talking to Lewis about this injury piece for a while because I just feel like it's not just football as usual, right? There's definitely more injuries this year than have been in recent years. And then on the other piece, I know you're not a doctor, but when we saw last weekend Tom Savage kind of writhing in the end zone, and there's all this conversation about whose responsibility was it. And so people who follow me and know I'm not a huge Bill O'Brien fan, I think there's a lot of things that you can blame him for. I don't think that was one of them. You know, there's a whole group of people that are in place in this new whole concussion protocol system. There's a spotter upstairs. The NFL brings in their own staff. There's an independent neurologist separate from the NFL's medical staff, the Texans' medical staff, and they have physicians on their staff, physicians, trainers, all of that. But the NFL brings in an independent neurologist who's supposed to be on top of this whole concussion thing in terms of examining and determining how serious it is. Good morning, Marcy. What the severity of it is. And they all missed it.
I think it's too many of them on the field. Because everybody's looking for something. And when they're looking for something, they're going to find really nothing. When you have that one person, for example, the head trainer.
Right.
Who specifically knows every athlete's body.
Mm-hmm.
Head down. And so their idea is every player, you look at every single player and every single motion. So when you're doing that, then you could just focus on need to focus on.
Right.
Whereas we have doctors on the sidelines and you have spotters in the stands. To me, they don't know your athlete as much as you.
But if you had somebody that was watching that hit that Tom Savage hit, and not the hit, but his response to it, his physical response to it, I mean, that should be valuable. I see him in his hand shaking and looking like almost like he's having a seizure. Somebody should have seen that and said, we got to look at him?
Well, I, a lot of times I think some of those personalities get caught up looking at the game, mm-hmm. not specifically looking at the play. And
well, that's what you're there for.
That's what you're supposed to be there for.
Right.
But to me, when you have that athletic trainer that just focuses, you can't beat that pure focus on one thing.
Right.
And so when you have that, I think you're more effective than having a lobby of people, because the lobby of people are looking at other things.
But so you have the athletic trainer, and he's looking at, you know, there's 11 people on his team at
of
one
course.
Time. He could have very easily not seen Savage and when he took the hit and how he was reacting. But somebody up there should have been able to look at the field and said, something's not right.
But you look at the distance
right.
from upstairs to the field.
Right.
It's almost impossible.
Well, and then we're watching it on the replay. Like all of us, like I don't, they didn't show, and I asked somebody, I don't think they showed that replay on the big board in the stadium.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm on the, if I'm downfield on the sideline, the same level as the play of action, I don't know how necessarily I would have, maybe I would have seen Tom Savage, but if I'm upstairs and I'm just, I'm the NFL person and I'm here looking for the whole composition as it's the end of the case and end of the play. That's when you really should be looking.
Right.
Guy's down. It's taking him a minute. Oh, wait, he's shaking. Oh, wait, on the replay, he really right.
He hit and his neck came back up. But you would have suspected that connection.
Right, but when you see the reaction, I'm saying, so now we see the reaction. We see the reaction, which is what everybody nationally was responding to because they saw the replay over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
So the spotter should have seen the replay because he's in the booth. He's not in the stands.
Right.
He or she, I don't know if it's a man or woman, should have seen the replay and at that point should have called down to the field and say, yeah, get him out. And then they should have really done a more extensive examination.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly.
The examination, they actually looked him over thinking that from what their distance is, looking at the field, to me, if I was looking from the sideline, I wouldn't have thought it was that big of a hit.
But if you saw his body...
Afterwards.
Right. That's what I'm saying. The people who that
yeah.
should have called out and said, nah, man, something's not right.
Yeah.
Get him out of there. He can't go back in.
Well, obviously.
That's where they missed it.
They missed it. And they have even an athletic trainer that they hired just to look at stuff like that. He missed it. But it makes me wonder how he missed it. And my only thing is he missed it because it did not appear to be that big of a hit.
Right.
And they took it for granted. So once they actually saw it, I saw one of the team media personnel or something grab the Savage's elbow,
mm-hmm.
which it shouldn't have been him. It should have been one of the medical personnel. And so they made a major boo-boo. And I'm pretty sure they're going to get fined for that.
Well, and I don't – the team, yeah, but I also think that the NFL concussion people,
mm-hmm.
what are they doing? Because they're only there to examine. You've got a neurologist. Only there, I say he or she is only there because of this. See if that's the problem, you know, if there's a concussion to be a part of the protocol, putting guys in protocol, seeing when they know gotta go to call. I just think it was not a Bill O'Brien issue. And so people who wanted to blame Bill O'Brien, like he said, if he had seen it, he would have taken him out.
Yeah.
Anybody that saw Tom Savage's physical response to that hit. Should have said, this kid can't play anymore.
Yeah, they definitely missed it. Now, I know, like I said, the sideline people, they were watching the game. They took it for granted. It didn't appear to be a bad hit.
Right.
And I think, you know, thinking about that, that's why they overlooked it, in my opinion. Because
right.
they're like, it doesn't appear to be hard enough. And then they question him.
Of course, he says he wants to go back, but they all want to go back. But I just feel like that the people upstairs are the ones that really should be held more accountable. All right, I am talking with Lewis Ray, who is a physical therapist who specializes in sports medicine. And we're talking about the fact that the NFL has seen so many season-ending injuries this year alone, right? There are so many injuries. And Lewis, he thinks it's because of the strength and conditioning that's changed. Is that across the board? Do you know of any teams that haven't gone to this build body mass, get bigger, stronger?
I think teams like New England, they make sure they're conditioned to the point where they do a lot of running. They believe in leanness instead of muscle mass. And when you have that leanness, you have more flexibility.
Right.
You have fewer injuries.
So the idea that So some of the football purists, when you talk to guys that played in the days like Mean Joe Green, I interviewed him a few years ago, and he talks about how the players don't have as much contact during the week. They don't have the contact, and that makes a difference, and that they're just bigger and stronger. So I guess all of those things combined with the way that the strength and conditioning has changed is almost creating a perfect storm.
Oh, of course. Yeah. The reason for less hitting was supposed to be to reduce the number of injuries.
Right.
However, it worked in reverse. Your body has to get used to taking hits. Your body's not used to taking hits. And so when you do take it, it's going from the sun to the your body is not used to, and all of a sudden you have a reaction. Mm. So when the body's not used to taking those hits, are not conditioned to take those hits, that definitely plays a big factor in it. And so I think the NFL, look at reversing that role of making sure they have the lower body hits instead of the upper body hits that's using their head. I mean, they'll definitely have to do that. But when it comes to the strength and conditioning, when it comes to supplements, when it comes to having the right personnel, I definitely believe that the ones that they're having right now, the strength and conditioning, that's tearing the bodies up.
So we look at some of the guys, Lewis, who have gone out for the season. I mean, obviously, people in Houston, if you're following in Houston, yeah, you think about Deshaun Watson, right? Mm-hmm. I think that maybe he took it. Do you think that he took to the knee in the game the week before was really the problem, right? And then they recognized it in practice later that week?
Yeah.
They played Seattle the Sunday before, and they show a hit where he got a helmet kind of to the knee,
mm-hmm.
and he went back in. And then later that week, maybe it was on Friday, they realized he had a tear.
I think a lot of times, maybe he had a small tear before then.
Mm.
When he took that hit, it probably increased, and then all of a sudden, they recognize that he has a major tear. So usually it's the small hit that creates a small tear, because it didn't just happen.
I believe that. And on that Friday, they said it was an injury that he was at practice and just kind of walked out and had this hit.
I know one football guy at the University of Houston who just done football. Next thing you know, he took a step toward it. Previously, it was already torn before.
So it just made it worse. It exacerbates the problem.
Yeah, that one cut that you make definitely makes it worse. So it is a preemptive strike. And so, which causes that. So I'm pretty sure Deshaun was already like that before.
And so, then, of course, people talk about they lost J.J. Watt. And this is like his third season-ending injury, right? He's had the back issue twice. He had this issue this year. You know, they lost Whitney Merciless, of course, mm-hmm. the pectoral muscle. They have just had on and on and on again with all of these injuries.
Well, I laid that back to the supplements that they take a period of time. The joints are just have gotten weaker. They're probably lifting for power. When they're lifting for power, they're overstretching those joints.
Right.
And when they're overstretching, then all of a sudden you get hit, boom, you got a tear.
So it is the and I've often wondered that it is the approach to training now. It is the more muscle mass and less flexibility. Because you know the guys we know who work hard,
mm-hmm.
whether it's the JJs, the Whitney Merciless, or like Richard Sherman, mm-hmm. you can go across the league, and the guys have gone out. But I do think it's interesting about the teams who haven't lost that many players. So you wonder if it is a team approach to strength and conditioning. You mentioned the New England Patriots.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't had a lot of players go down mm-hmm. with season-ending injuries.
Right.
And so it's their approach, is what you're saying,
it's
training.
It's their approach. A lot of them believe in more conditioning when it comes to running.
Okay.
Less power, more strength, and they have a few. That's a training program that we had when it came to strength and conditioning under Tom Wilson. It wasn't about having a big, fat, strong guy or a big power lifting the whole time.
Right.
It was about only maintaining your strength, period. When you maintain your strength, you have more flexibility, you're quicker, and you're faster. And to me, that's what it was all based on. We had injuries and fast recovery times.
And so when you guys changed that one spring, you said with a new strength coach, you had six ACL
tears. Yep, in a spring practice. Six. and we recognize that problem because we had never had it.
Right.
And we pinpointed to the point of what the things he was doing in the weight room. Deeper squats, more power lifting. Players returning cutting.
You know, I've been all season. I'm not a trainer. I'm not a physical therapist. But I've just really wondered because I felt like this season, there are definitely more, not just injuries, but more that I can remember. And I've covered this game for a long time.
And you look at this. They have all season. I mean, three OTAs in the offseason?
Right. And then they go to camp. There's mini camp. Then they go to training camp. There's not a lot of time when they're not working.
Yeah, and everybody has their own individual strength and conditioning coach that they go off to.
Right.
And everybody's own individual strength coach doing their own things. A lot of it is powerlifting. Well, we got to get stronger. We got to be better.
Yeah.
So whenever we take those hits, we'll be right. We'll just break them down.
So when you look at a guy like Bill O'Brien, and this isn't a knock on him, but he does like the bigger mass guy. I mean, you know, and there's some coaches that do like that bulk. And so if you're training, if you're building for that, you're saying it compromises, you know, those interior muscles, a joint and tendon.
Of course it does. It gives you that flexibility. You just get bigger, stronger without flexibility. You know, and when you emphasize speed and running with the lifting,
right,
you're definitely going to get less injury.
So let's table the NFL talk for a minute and talk about the NBA, and in particular Houston Rockets and this team. So people are excited. Nationally, they're talking about the Rockets. They won their 11th game last night. They brought in Chris Paul, who I thought was a great addition. He always gets injured. He has the knee, you know, something. But it looks like they have a system, and Mike D'Antoni is just – I just, as a coach, I like him. As a coach, I like him. And he seems like he has a good plan for how to use Chris Paul, because the real key is to have Chris Paul ready for postseason, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think about the potential of Chris Paul being healthy long-term? A guy like Nene, who is a big guy that they need and use, and the fact that a guy like James Harden is never hurt.
Well, Harden plays all the time.
Right.
He's always moving. He's always running. D'Antonio's system, run.
Right.
Not get banged up. You have fewer injuries. Everything about them is up and down.
I mean, Harden is like, he's never, I don't know that I've ever seen him sit out because of an injury.
No,
since he's been here. I didn't follow him quite that closely in Oklahoma City, but I don't recall him not playing because he was hurt.
Yeah, every once in a while he has a bang, but I think his biggest thing is nobody's ever put their body on. And they're constantly running.
Right.
And that's my emphasis, too, when it comes to ACL injuries, you know, and the strength and condition. When you're constantly running, constantly moving, your body is constantly adjusting to what you're doing.
Right.
When you're doing it, you have less influence on injury because of that. And Paul, his personality fit the Rockets.
Right.
Under the D'Antonio system, he's not a banger as far as point guards. He gives up the ball real quick, which means he doesn't drive and go at anybody real hard. And that right there influences the less probability of him getting hurt. That's what I'm going to do.
So
he's running.
So they're not doing as much running.
They're doing a lot of running.
Right.
They're not doing as much standing. And
right.
Their whole plan is to run all the time, keep the feet moving, keep the body moving. And I believe that's why they're staying healthy. And to me, they're lean. The Rockets aren't chunky. They're not a chunky team.
No, they're lean. But even their big guys, like
Capella's lean.
Well, Capella's lean. I mean, he's maybe too lean, but he's getting bigger.
Yeah.
I mean, he's getting stronger. The key is his strength. And then you have a P.J. Tucker, but he's not a big guy. But he's able to, like the other night against what they played, the Pelicans and Boogie Cousins, he was able to really kind of hold his own against Boogie Cousins, who is a beast on the board.
He's lean and he's strong and he knows how to use his body.
Right.
And I think that's a big factor. He's not one of those just big guys that just don't bang, bang, bang. They have a better chance of getting hit. But when you're leaner and you're stronger and you're athletic, you have a less chance of getting hit.
So I want to talk about some of the guys that you work with. I know you do some work with, you work with John Lucas, and and a lot of guys come here to rehab, whether they're professional football players or basketball players. You know, what do you see? When is it that a guy knows, you know what, my body has taken all it can? Like, I'm physically not able to compete. Have you been a part of those kind of conversations where, I mean, I know it's a challenge for a guy to say, I'm done. But what have you noticed about that transition time, that piece?
The ones I used to rehab, they constantly work out. They constantly don't have those problems because of their workout regime where they're just constantly moving, constantly running. And so, and what John Lucas was doing during his period of time, he constantly had those athletes running and moving. So the problems were not to the point where they've gotten lazy doing their body. The biggest thing I've noticed is just constant movement.
But when is it that when is it that you can see a guy physically and say, like, kind of, you're done, right? You know, you may be doing anything you can, but at some point, our bodies are done. Like, we can't compete forever, especially at that level. And so, what do you see that lets you know that that is in?
Well, when they come in for rehab, and you give them certain exercises, and they just constantly struggle. They lift, they struggle. Going to get to the bike, mentally, they don't have time. Their focus is, their bodies are broken down to a point where mentally it's just not fun with them anymore, and they just don't want to do it. They show up sometimes, and they don't show up all the time. The ones that John sent to me, or was sending to me, every day he tells them to show up at 10 or 11, they're down, even before then. And they sit around, and they laugh and talk. They have that refreshing look about themselves, and they don't mind working. So the ones who he has sent to me who,
Let me ask you this, and I don't want to mention his name because we didn't say we talk about him, but there's a player that you work with, some Achilles issues, right? And then he says he has, like, some stuff in his knee. I mean, is that kind of how it starts when you have your body just constantly has an issue that you, like, you know, and he by all accounts, he's hitting it every day.
Yeah.
So it's not that he's in his mind giving up, but when will he know his body has had all it can take?
Well, I think the biggest thing is psychologically, he wakes up in the morning and he just does not feel like going to rehab.
But what if you do feel like it and your body just can't do it?
Well, I think it takes time. The hard floor, all the elements of just the motivation, it'll hit you. So right now, maybe at a point where it's hitting them, the motivation is not there only because they're not getting the contacts to have a job.
Right.
And that's when all your aches and pains start coming. It's like, oh, my knees,
right.
My Achilles. And that's when it hits you. That's when you're at the end of the road.
We are live at Chama Goucha here at View in Westmore, and I'm talking with Lewis Ray. He was a physical therapist who specializes in sports medicine. His whole career has been with working with athletes.
All my life.
He's worked with high school athletes. He's worked with collegiate athletes, which is where I first met him. He's worked with professional athletes. And so we are talking about just the onslaught of injuries in the National Football League. So you work with collegiate players and you work with high school players. And so now we've had this age of this concussion era, if you will, a more information about it. Do you find many, because I know sometimes there's some school that may call on you during playoffs to come in with the players. Are you finding more high schools taking some different precautions? Are they acting differently because of what's happening at the national level? Are they approaching things the same as old days?
The first symptom of a headache,
right,
from a hit, they automatically take them away.
Okay. So it is making a difference. It is trickling down some.
Oh, yeah. From high school to even little kids now, it's a big triple. I mean, the slightest of headaches, parents are saying, I don't want my kid playing. And the athletic trainers are just pulling them. They're not taking any chances. Basketball, same thing. With women's basketball,
right?
You can see a hit. First time where they're grabbing their head, they're saying, nope, you're done. So, yeah, and that's making a big difference in long-term effects because this concussion thing is very serious.
It's very, very real. It's very real. So aside from the concussions, are they doing things differently with high school athletes or collegiate? Well, maybe more high school, because collegiate programs are like NFL programs almost, in terms of how they train, how they condition, in terms of, so that, you know, because you're younger and you can bounce back quicker, but are they doing things, you know, any differently in terms of preparing to make sure that these young people are?
They're emphasizing more running, less power drills, less hitting.
Right.
So it's more so running, t-shirts and shorts and running and less hitting. That's the biggest thing that's going on.
So you're saying that the whole running and hitting, running less hitting is, you keep going back to that. You're like, the old way of doing it, even though we have all this new technology, that's still the...
Yeah, that's still the right way.
Right.
And the old way, as I said before, I could still go back to the University of Houston. All we did was ran. Under Bill Yeoman's system of less tackling, you may have one power day, but the emphasis on running was still there. And so now in these high schools, shirts, shorts, t-shirts, and less hitting, less contact has led to less injuries.
And is that translating into the collegiate level
into
as well?
Into collegiate level, I can see now that...
So a guy like a Nick Saban, who we know is a...
Power
football guy.
And in the SEC, it's all power.
Right.
That conference, they're still old school. They're still doing a heck of a lot of hitting. And I see where now, let's say Alabama, I watch certain players get certain hits, they're out for these.
Right.
They're minimizing their playing. They're rotating a lot of linemen in, they're rotating a lot of back in, so everybody's having less contact. So just leaving that one player in and running the ball 30 times, he may run 7 or 8 times a game compared to the 15, 20 times they were running.
Mm-hmm.
I see a lot of substitutes. In those power conferences, the hitting is still there. But
right.
The contact is less because there's more rotation of players in the lineup. And that's a different way of doing it, but that's the way to get it done.
So do you think there's going to be, do you expect to see teams, especially NFL teams, at the end of this season, kind of reevaluate their strength and conditioning program?
Of course. They got to. Because of the high number of injuries, but their off-season programs have to be reduced and emphasized on running than strength. Because when you have this all power, and then all of a sudden you get into a game or you get into a drill situation where somebody can hit, they're turkeying those torque in those joints, and those joints are snapping just like that.
So, well, yeah, I'm just I'm curious because everything is about new technology and how we do things differently. And you're saying the body is still the body. And
yeah.
So flexibility is key. So I know a guy who was an Olympic, he was training for the Olympics, and he tore his hamstring or did something to his hamstring. And so he was introduced to Pilates as a way to rehab. And so now he has started, he has his own Pilates studio. And so he trains people, and in the off season he trains athletes. He trains anybody. And I take his Pilates, but he trains a lot of athletes who come in the off season because they understand the value of the flexibility piece. I'm just surprised that there's not more of that. And I wonder if there are going to be conversations in this off season about what they do in the NFL, because they've got to know it's not just that the athletes are bigger and stronger. They've been bigger and stronger for a while. There is clearly a problem with something they're doing, and I think it has to be strength and conditioning.
Well, the big thing you got to do is one athlete, you got to look at his car loose. Never a hamstring tear. Never. And his thing was running flexibility. Running flexibility.
Bench.
You got to look at people like that. The biggest thing is their bodies are still the same, but they emphasize more running, more flexibility. And
right.
To me, that makes a huge difference. No, nothing's changed. The body's still the same. But all supplements that they're taking have definitely hampered.
So what kind of supplements are people find themselves being, are they focusing on?
I think the biggest thing is protein and gets the body strong.
So I've heard people medically talk about protein and how you can have too much.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a thought that, you know, more protein makes you bigger and stronger, but more protein can also compromise, if I'm correct, other things in your body.
It waters down the joints. When it waters down the joints, it's easier for them to repair.
Okay. That's interesting. So more protein, water, too much protein waters down the joints.
Yeah. Your body's full of water and the joints get lighter.
Right.
More easier to tear. It's like a lot of times people start saying about conditioning when it comes to being in the pool a lot.
Right.
The buoyancy of the water loosens the joints. And you have a higher instance of tearing. Every once in a while, it's good to get in the water to relax the muscles.
Right.
But when you're constantly in the water all the time, you try to go out and run, and then you wind up tearing a joint.
So, because everybody said to me, obviously, when I had my surgery, make sure you got to go get, you know, do some work in the water. I like the water,
mm-hmm.
but I'm not doing the kind of stuff that people were talking about it doing, but it is good. But it can give you, because you're able to do things in the water you can't do outside,
mm-hmm.
and it can give you a false sense of where you are.
Of course. And then, of course, your body could be tight. The water loosens your joint somewhat, but all of a sudden, when it loosens it too much, all of a sudden, you take off and you tear.
Hmm.
You take off and you tear.
Interesting. Interesting. So I'm talking to Lewis Ray, who is a physical therapist who specializes in sports medicine. His whole career has been working with athletes. He's worked at a collegiate level. He's worked with high school. He's rehabbed a lot of professional athletes. And when you see these guys going down now, it just makes you, I'm always cringing or grab. I mean, you hate to see it.
I cringe because all of a sudden you have all these fancy equipment styles and everything that they say makes the body stronger and bigger, and they have all the testing equipment that defies supposed to defy anything when it comes to prevent injury.
Right.
And with all this fancy equipment,
right,
you have more injuries. And so they've made it more harder to do. I mean, the simple thing,
right,
to me, as I said before, the simple running. Simple, just stay, keep your body strong, and you're fine. But all this emphasis on, let's say, for example, athletes who are natural, cornbread fed, mustard green fed, mashed potato fed type athletes, they were not facing these problems, and their bodies were bigger and stronger compared to this new age of modern equipment that's supposed to prevent all the injuries.
Right.
It's not happening. The old age stage of just keeping it simple was working a lot better.
So do you expect to see people go back to that? And I mean,
yes.
And who initiates the conversation? I mean, is it the head coach that will say something's wrong? I mean, I'm really curious because I do. That's why I ask you, when you look around, look at teams around the league who do it differently, how many teams are still doing the kind of the New England Patriots way, if you will?
Not me. The athletic training should start in the training room. The coaches should make sure they have what the trainer wants.
Right. But they have to have a trainer with that mindset. And it seems like the training staff and the strength and conditioning staff have to really work hand in hand on programs that make most sense for the athletes.
It makes sense. But when you have the two in charge, the strength coach always will have their idea of getting everything to body bigger and stronger and make sure that we have the best equipment to make it happen. But the athletic trainer, to me, definitely knows exactly what breaks the body down.
Yeah.
And so when you know what breaks the body down, and the strength and conditioning coach is to emphasize the strength and to tear somebody's body up, you have a conflict.
Right.
And so when you have that conflict, it's going to always be a fine line where we're preventive, they're destructive, and that's where we have a problem.
So because you're a trainer, you think the trainer should take the lead?
Yeah, of course. of course.
So I was at a basketball practice not too long ago at a university, which will remain nameless. It doesn't necessarily have to be local. And so the the football coach at this university is talking to the trainer about one of the players. And so the trainer's telling the coach, yeah, he's not ready. He's got to do something. And so the coach jokingly is like, I need him on the field. I mean, and these are the kind of conversations they have. He goes, I need him on the field. All my guys can't be in the training room. They can't all be on the training table. And so I can imagine as the stakes get higher, the pressure gets a little tougher where you're getting that, I need him on the field. So you are, my guys are coming to you, but I need my guys on the field. So, you know, and so it was interesting because I understood what the conversation, I understood that conversation. And I'm sure that's the same thing. I'm sure that happens in every NFL training room when they say, and it's not that the coaches don't care about players, but we need you on the field.
That's the key thing. An effective training room.
Right.
Is preventive.
Right.
Foreseeable, making sure that the body is prepared to prevent things
right.
that happen, which starts in the weight room.
Right.
And then once it does happen, the efficiency of getting that player ready is the most important thing. You're not just a tree to speed up the injury. And the trainer's job and the role is to get that player on the field and to use the most productive way to get them out there as fast as they can. And the coach has every reason to make sure, in a sense, about pressure, because the thing is, we're not forcing you to play, but you are.
Right.
But to make sure that athlete is back on the field as quick as possible.
Let me ask you a question about performance-enhancing drugs, right? So we know locally about Brian Cushing,
mm-hmm.
who's had a history of some challenges with, well, not challenges, hell, he's used PED, right? He's been popped. And so I have always read and felt like, with my non-medical background, that when you subject your body to those PEDs, that you also weaken those, are they the soft switch muscles?
Yeah.
And so you're always those tissues, and so you're prone to more injuries. Is that accurate?
Of course, it's very much accurate, and I've seen it happen so many times over the years.
Right.
So many athletes that I know were actually doing that.
Right.
It definitely got hurt. Definitely had torn Achilles, torn pecs.
Right.
Torn elbow joints because of the weakness that your body has through PEDs.
So you're also when you use the PEDs and you're compromising, right, those tissues, does that also affect maybe like broken bones?
The broken bones, to me, no, it doesn't affect the broken bones.
That's contact.
Yeah, that's from contact.
So the tears that you see it from.
A whole lot of back muscle strains.
So what is it that you would recommend to professional athletes or to people who have high school ball? You know, I have some friends who, you know, kids are playing high school ball and their moms are like, yeah, I don't know if I want my son to do this, in terms of what they should do, because now they're all doing, let's go to high school. They're doing these programs that they go out and they pay for, I don't know what it's called, Football America or something. So they're training harder with guys who have, I guess, have been in the pros, work with pros. Is that too much? What is too much for you? And how should your body gradually amp up to?
I think they're overdoing it.
They're overdoing it?
Yeah, definitely overdoing it. And a lot of the ones who are having these problems hadn't even played a lick of football, maybe played a little college ball, and they are not structurally sound enough to train a lot of these kids.
But everybody wants the edge, right? The guys who are playing in the league, they want the edge to stay longer for that and to get that next contract or that last contract. The guys in high school want the edge so that they can be recruited and not drafted, but recruited and go play at the collegiate level. The collegiate guys want to get the edge so they can all go to the league. It's just an endless cycle.
I think in high school they have natural gifted talent.
Right.
Some of them have these Sunday afternoon workouts and Saturday workouts, and their parents are bringing them. And 8 out of 10 of those are not even making it to the next level.
Wow.
They're taking the money.
So here's the thing. I think that's key for people to know. I haven't talked about this in a while, but who gets to the next level, right? You said 8 out of 10.
Mm-hmm.
It's about what we hear. Get to the collegiate level to play.
Yeah.
And then, you know, about 3 or 4% of the guys who play collegiately get to the professional level to play.
Right.
It's just not a huge number.
No.
It doesn't mean that you shouldn't try and be competitive, but, you know, you have these lifelong, you can have these lifelong injuries.
I mean, you have major Division I players.
Right.
Who come from Tennessee, Alabama, and all those students. Mm-hmm. Who go through the best weight strength program. And then you have these Division II and NAIA players now that are making it because they're just naturally gifted athletes. And so when you have those naturally gifted athletes going to play in time, they are the ones who usually make it, and they don't have all those big power strength and condition programs. I look at athletes like Darryl Green.
Yeah.
From Jones High School. I guarantee you, I saw Darryl in the offseason doing more running than any athlete I've ever seen.
And he played a long time.
Longer,
right.
And he did not emphasize being in the weight room. He's at it 20 years, and he didn't have that sprint and special guy he was working on.
Right.
And he's asked him. He was naturally gifted with a big run. So that's why I'm saying a lot of times you have these programs right now, you have kids going and traveling all over the world and parents spending all of this money for what? For somebody to say, hey, I trained in such. Really, it's cool. And
so,
to get the seed and money to run their program.
Right. So this is from Elenis Westbrook, who's a longtime friend, and he's a baseball guy.
Yeah.
Playing in the, I'd say, 49ers, in the Giants farm system. He says, when players are playing at a high level, college and pro players, are multivitamins enough to help them recover from the physical exertion, or do they need to have some other types of supplements to help their bodies recover?
To me?
Yeah.
I personally believe the natural food that you're eating.
They need juice plus, fruit and vegetables in a capsule.
Yeah.
Because really, you know, and I say that, that's just because I really believe in juice plus, but, you know, as we are started, we have all these programs, you know, it's all Whole 30, plant-based, all about getting more fruit and vegetables in our body,
mm-hmm.
because that is what gives our body the fuel. That is what, you know, creates the antioxidants, the anti-inflammatory.
Yeah.
And so can you overexert, do those supplements? So you're saying you don't really need all the supplements to help you. And the recovery, that's a great question, Elenis. I appreciate that.
The natural food to me is good. The natural juices.
Right.
That's because everybody was doing the natural vegetables.
Right.
Years ago. And that was working. And that's still to the day the body has not changed. So, yes, I totally agree with that.
Fruit and vegetables in the capsule. Because you're very welcome, Elenis Westbrook. You got people on Chalk Talk are smart, right? They listen, they learn. And Elenis works with a lot of young kids.
Mm-hmm.
And he has a baseball program, and so he works with them. And they play with wooden bats. I can't think of the name of it. He'll probably tell me. But, you know, he's really passionate about them learning the game and being exposed to it and learning it the right way. And so I think it is important that we educate people who are working with athletes about what they need to do in terms of being their best self. Fruit and vegetables. And you know what? That was a couple of years ago during Texans camp. There was a player, and his name escapes me right now because they cut him. And he ended up as a receiver. He had an injury. Texas Wood Bat League, that is. Thank you, Elenis. He has the Texas Wood Bat League.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a league that he's either a founder of or definitely instrumental in. And I think he's one of the founders, but he's a baseball guy. Right.
And that's getting the players ready for long term using the wooden bat.
Now, why is that? Why is that?
The aluminum metal bat, much lighter.
Right.
The wooden bat, heavier. But your body is accustomed to using the regular bat that you're supposed to use in regular games.
Right.
Which is more effective.
So just the whole approach to using wood bats and doing that is
natural. It's a natural right way to do it because you're using a wooden bat, which will use the next every level you get to.
Right.
Even collegiate level will eventually change to the wooden bat.
You think so?
Oh yeah.
So Elenis, do you think that are they going to eventually go to wooden bats and at the collegiate level? Tell us. And why is that? They can transition better to the pros.
The pros. The pros in the minor leagues, because baseball is really guarding a lot of strength.
Right.
And the strength that they're guarding is from the natural wooden bat and the future minor leagues.
Okay, so yes, Elena says right on, Lewis, right on point. That's it.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm. That's why Elena started the Texas Wood Bat League, so that the kids start younger, and they adjust and not have to make that huge jump.
Yeah, because when they go from high school to college, the lighter bat, then back to the pros where they get the minor league contract, they have to readjust again. Mm-hmm. Keep it all the same.
All right. Well, I didn't know we get to baseball, but listen. So, as always, I appreciate it, Lewis Ray. I will post his. How do people reach you, Lewis, if they are interested? What's your phone number?
713-292-7148.
Okay, so I'm going to put your name. So if you want to reach Lewis Ray, that's his number, 713-292-7148. And he is a great person that can talk to you about training and rehabbing you and getting you ready and just really guiding you in terms of with your, especially parents, with your young people about what they should or should not be doing.
Especially right now, I get so many kids and so many parents right now who call me and ask me questions about their injuries.
Right.
And at any time, I'm always available to address that. And of course, the instructions that I give them are so natural and they recover faster because I've been doing this for 33 years. I've seen it all.
Wow.
33 years. And I'm more accustomed to answering those questions like that. And I know what works more efficiently.
Right.
And faster. And allows the new stuff. Because I was looking at my game shop. You had to make sure that you rehabbed everybody to get them back out just as quick and just as fast. And everything we used was preventive.
Eunice says she does think flexibility is a must as we get older. And Lorenzo, welcome. I knew you'd get a Bill O'Brien question. Do you think we're going to keep Bill O'Brien?
Yep.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm going to go on and say, I don't know how I missed this earlier, but yes, I do think we're going to keep him. I just think he'll be back next year. We'll talk about that more and later next week. I think we should... We are a better strength, get a better strength and conditioning coach. And Lorenzo, I think it's really in the program, right? Because if you bring in a coach and if the program is really about massive bodybuilding, it doesn't matter who that person is. And the Texans need another defensive coordinator. So we are out of time, but listen, you guys know how about Rio Cornell. I like Mike Vrabel as a linebacker coach. I think the Texans definitely miss Romeo Crennel's leadership on the sidelines. And I think that the promotion of Mike Vrabel was immature.
I definitely think so.
So I'm going to leave it there for today. We will come back. And listen, the Texans do play this weekend. They're on the road. They're playing the Jaguars. With A.J. Boye, who they didn't re-sign in the offseason. And I'm not terribly optimistic about their chances, but I will be watching. And you can follow me online. Lewis Wright, thank you as always. And listen, I am live at Chama Goucher. I'll be here again next week. Come by and have lunch. And I appreciate you for being a part of Chalk Talk. As always, follow me on Twitter at Kim Y. Davis. Follow me on Instagram. I'm doing a whole lot better, Kim.Y.Davis. And I will see you next week. In the meantime, have a great week. Do something kind for yourself and do something kind for somebody else. I'll see you next time, everybody. Thanks for watching. End this episode. Awesome. Thank you.